Hi everyone, you're listening to the Bialucci Podcast, uncensored and completely unedited discussions about life and everything in it. We hope you enjoy the show.
And here we are.
Hello.
Leanne, is that how it's pronounced?
It is. Good morning.
Do you know how many people called Leanne that have spelt their names differently that I've met? So L-E-A-N-N-E, L-E-H-A-N, and then I met somebody else who would... to two N's.
Oh, mine's two N's, L-I-A.
But yours is L-I.
Yeah.
Hers was L-A. Oh, it's going to get confusing. But, before I forget, what you just mentioned about, we were talking about priests, and you said you know somebody...
A retired priest. I mean, when he was practicing, he got caught holding hands with a nun, so he got kicked out, and he became a porn producer. He's the most ethical porn producer I've ever met.
Yeah, I don't judge people. I just think, look, what was in him before? Like that? Or was it not? I was going to say, it's not like he became an Uber driver. He had to do it for money. That's quite a weird thing to. Was his somebody he knew was involved? Or?
Look, there's loads of many reasons people.
Or you just didn't ask any questions.
Maybe you should just get him in and interview him.
Yeah, that's not a joke.
Actually, well, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Get him
but there's only
collar.
One question that I've got for him. Like, what happened? And then after that, I get the rest. It's just. But yeah, it's saying that because I was talking about guests I'd had on, and yeah, she's a priest. But the funny thing is, it was, yeah, she said I was a normal kid. She said I was into like Beatles and things and wearing miniskirt, but people keep telling her she should be a priest. And people kept saying it to her, and then just like a weird load of things happened, and then she ended up, but she went through it and thought, oh, right, there you go, that's how you're going to become a priest. But it's just like random stuff. She'd walk past somewhere, somebody gave her a book, she didn't left it, and then one day she opened it and saw one passage and that part, and it was all weird. But then she was telling me about how they're trained, and that's
real strict.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought. She said, like, oh, yeah, 2 weeks ago or so, she said, I was on the train and somebody just come up to me and said, I'm going to stab you, I'm going to kill you. And she said, oh, we're taught de-escalation technique, and I hadn't even thought about that, you know, because you have to deal with God knows how many different types of people.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, and it just went on. She said, I did not want to be a priest. I was just into like Beatles music and things. I didn't want to be it, but it was funny just to watch that process. Talking of the process of getting into things. So your background, can you just quickly say what, because I'm worried about the wording of things.
Oh, the wording.
I know adult seems to be the main adult.
That's fashionable today, isn't it? Just to call it the adult.
Yeah. W1, if you can just call it.
Yeah, W1, let's be a little bit here. Yeah. I mean, we can go to the suburbia and there's loads of other words for it. So it was a porn industry.
Okay.
That's what it was. When I entered it, there was advertisements for porn actresses.
Yeah.
It never said adult actresses. If somebody said that to me, I'd be like,
Right.
You know, what age do you think you're actually an adult?
Is that
you
part
know?
Of it, it's becoming mainstream, so they've had to rebrand it sort of thing as adult to make it more mainstream. Because porn wouldn't really work.
The word porn's been hijacked. Because if you look at, you've got car porn, food porn.
What porn?
Car porn.
Car.
Oh, yeah.
C-A-R.
Car porn. Food porn.
Yeah.
Makeup porn. So in
I see what you mean. Right, okay, yeah.
Mainstream companies have hijacked the name porn.
Yeah.
So obviously we've had to look at the industry and say, well, what is a porn star these days? None exist anymore. You know, you can't be a porn star. You can be
before we started recording. We were discussing the people that were making porn DVDs because of the internet. Where are they making their money?
Okay, what
are they gone special? What was you talking about? Sorry, I'm not going to say that. What was the? Was there a Pirates of the Caribbean or something?
Oh, you've got, yeah, so they're the trilogy orders, like takeoffs of mainstream movies and stuff.
Right.
They were normally done by a major company called Private.
Yeah. Oh, that was it, yeah.
And they were like major financial, you know, cost. But they used to make the money on the DVD sales and, you know, all these companies knew that the internet was going to take off. So they were backlogging it. But when you sign that model release, I mean, we'll talk about financial shortly, you know, you only get paid for doing that DVD and the photos that go with it.
There's no royalties like a normal film?
No, there's royalties.
Really?
No, I'd be worth a fortune by now.
Isn't there a sort of bigger don't they come under a bigger umbrella with like unions or something?
Oh, you're joking.
Really?
No. You know, there's no union in the UK specifically for the adult industry. I was asked if I wanted to do it.
Right, yeah.
but it would just be impossible within the UK because of British law. It's still an unlicensed, unregulated industry. So you can't have a union to make something that is not already regulated.
Are they allowed to, so on the DVDs, would they be allowed to actually put that onto the internet without you knowing? Like,
they can just do what they want with it.
Yeah. Right? Are they, is there any copyright laws there, or are they able just to?
So the companies are like, say for myself, which I originally shot for, oh, I've got no rights over what they do with it. If you actually went onto Google now, you could get your phones out and do it. You'd look at, you'd think I was doing porn 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because what, even though I retired like 22 years ago, they're allowed to re-edit it, and they've just got to re-edit it one little bit. And when a new platform comes up, they can just resell and resell onto different platforms. So the companies are making a fortune 2 decades later out of my material.
And you get nothing.
I get nothing.
Nothing at all.
Oh, no, I just get called a porn star by the British media still, you know, and I'm like, been retired 22 years.
Yeah. And you got into it just out of need.
Do you know what? Do you know, I didn't make
it. So I read that you're sort of the black sheep of the family in terms of you sort of do what you want.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? That's because I had no structure, no boundaries growing up. In fact, I was like the black sheep. Yeah, you know, my mother was very jealous of me because my father kind of made me his, you know, what they your favourite. But you're a child. It's not your fault. And then so my siblings really kind of didn't react very well to me growing up.
And what year is this?
Oh, my God. If I was born, I'm going back to 1980 when I was so younger.
This isn't like
and
nowadays.
Get,
that's
no,
back then that,
I mean, it still
knew.
Happens today. And in fact, I don't have a relationship with my family anymore for many reasons. But for me, when I became a young mum and I needed help, they didn't help me. And then my father died.
Yeah.
And for me, I was surrounded in a council estate, surrounded by drug dealers and thieves and car thieves and, you know, when you look at it, no matter how you look at it, they are criminal activity.
Yeah.
So when you are raised on a council estate in a suburban area like that, I didn't want that for myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be a drug dealer. I didn't want to be stealing cars for a living. And I didn't want to be any kind of person who was going to safeguard a criminal.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, nobody's looked after me. Where's my standing ground? I was on £54 a week as a single mother looking after two children.
Yeah.
You know, you can't even have ice cream, you know, do you know what I mean?
You can't do anything with that.
And no matter, and I chose to be a probation officer, actually, as my first career. And nobody supported me. They said, why would you want to work with criminals?
Mm.
And so anything I tried to do that was good was put down on. And I thought, do you know what?
Bollocks,
fuck you all. I'm okay to swear. I'm not.
It's
not on a BBC, so we're absolutely fine.
<Swear away>.
So I just thought, fuck you. Nobody's looking after me. And I actually needed, and I know you're going to all think this is probably bonkers, I needed some stability and structure in my life. And going into porn disciplined me.
Yeah.
I didn't have casual sex. I wasn't going into bars and getting trashed and picking up strangers. You know, when I say stranger, that could just be men who live in the town. It happens on, everybody does it. And I was able to make financial decisions. I was able to get out of the council house system.
Yeah.
My mother actually went mad with me for providing my council house back to the government.
Oh.
After 2 years, I said, I don't want to be in this system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I went to work, found my structure, found a lot of support mentally. And I learned about consent.
Within the industry?
Within the industry. Right. Outside the industry.
Even back then?
Back then.
Oh.
I was in a really professional industry. If you turn up to work late or any sign of alcohol or drugs or anything, they would not shoot you. Bang.
Oh,
you've
really?
Lost your career.
I thought they'd be... Oh, okay.
No. You can't.
Yeah.
Are they very strict as well with, like, testing? And
very.
Very, yeah. Because I've heard this before of, you know, people in the industry going along and lying and say that they've had a test when they haven't, and then they've just literally been told to leave.
Yeah, I mean, that is the good side of the industry, okay? So don't get me wrong, there is a bad side to every industry, even like podcasting industries or, you know, I do a lot of work with the NHS now and beside the police, and there's bad in the police industry. I mean, you would have heard local news bulletins lately about the abuse within the NHS. I mean, I'm well aware of that because I get the Freedom of Information on a project I'm working on. There was probably more abuse in those trusted industries than the porn industry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you've also got to look at the British industry compared to the American industry, compared to the European industry. The English industry is known as a cottage industry. It's very small and very few productions getting done. Most performers go into escorting beside that, or find sugar daddies online. You know, and then with the testing, unfortunately in the UK, the NHS are picking up the bill for the free testing for people to be sex workers and porn performers. But they only give you like a hard copy, so it's easy to fake it.
Oh, right.
So there's a lot of
There's no electronic, nothing online.
No. There's like the Americans are well sorted on this. They're decades ahead of the UK, but they are a bigger industry as well. Mm. But yes, there's a big complaint going on in the UK market now about the fake certificates going
around.
Because
there was a big thing in America where some guy was working and he'd had AIDS. Wasn't there in like 20, 30 years ago in like a...
John Stagliano. And there was a few others as well. What they had done to try and save, cut production costs, they went to shoot in Brazil or some South American country. I mean, I've interviewed John Stagliano and I'm sure it was Brazil. And they went there to save money. But if you're only going to pay a porn performer £50, but their test is going to cost 30,
right? Yeah.
Then you're going to get fake testing. And that's how, you know, infections were getting into the industry by the, you know, producers cutting costs. And now, you know, it's the only industry in the world that pays less than it did 25 years ago.
Is there an elite actor, actress in adult like there was? Because that's what I said, how are they earning their money? Are they doing just stuff online now? They're not doing physical media, like DVDs and things.
Haven't they gone to, like, you know, there's like OnlyFans out there now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's all online. There's no physical, there's nothing being...
There are still...
Films?
Yeah, still films being done. So in America, there's still a huge market because one part of my career is counselling the adult stars from the US and the UK. And there's lots of productions still going on. And they have consent in America. You have consent forms, and you have a list. You get sent an itinerary list before going on to a set to agree to what you would do and what you won't do. And you know, you've even got on set intimacy coaches in the US, and it's becoming very similar here. There are very few porn producers here who pay models directly for the content. As I said, the ex-vicar is the best one. but he's great. He's artistic. He's very caring. And then you've got the other ones that are not so caring.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, girls are making money that way. However, you do have OnlyFans and you have many vids and, you know, Pornhub and all this stuff. But it's a false sense of reality because the British media will... And I say the British media because they're the worst in the world. And I've been on the receiving end. So what you read in the newspapers or online about somebody earning, say, £10,000 per month, that's probably the top 0.2%. So, you know, during COVID, you know, OnlyFans went through the roof with people wanting to sell material for survival and to feed their children and pay their mortgages and rent. But very few of them were even able to cover their rent because... Yeah. You don't make that much money. You'll be lucky if you can pay your rent.
Yeah, with a £10,000 a week, there's a reason why she's being spoken about as the one with the £10,000 because it's very unique.
It's like in my era, I was the porn queen of England and I was on like £10,000 a week. Now, that's very rare. Mm. And I wanted to make that clear is because so many people say, oh my God, if you can make that much, make that much. Yeah. Mm. And the headlines, you know, porn queen of England makes £10,000 a month, says it were better for her children. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, does somebody want to ask me between the lines why it was a chosen career to make my children's lives better and how many people who I work with were making that kind of money? And there was very, very few.
So what do you think about the OnlyFans and those online things? As a general, do you go with the world's everyone's choice or do you go, look, there's a lot of downside to the...
There's a lot of downsides.
What I mean. But in an overall, what do you think?
I think it's a fantastic way if you understand marketing, accounting, publicity.
Because it's always
PR.
Good to have an opportunity to do those things and to not be stigmatized.
A choice. Absolutely.
But my worry is that you've got a load of kids doing it basically and haven't got a clue what they're giving away.
And also, it's just like you'll start off with a picture And then someone will ask, you know, say, I'll give you more money for a video. And
for
then,
a video.
And then you're taking more clothes off. And then by the end of it, I've had a lot of interviews in the past that people are saying, you know what, I went on there innocent with bikini pictures, and then I was end up.
Well,
know,
model, just on model.
Yeah, model. Yeah, yeah. And then I've ended
then they
up.
Then a model.
Because the money comes, and then you're like, ooh, yeah. I can get more money for this, I get more money for that. And by the time that you know it, you've got everything out, and
That's because a lot of you've also got to think, a lot of people are never taught about emotions at school.
Yeah.
They're not educated. I definitely wasn't. I mean, my sex education was a black and white movie talking about how to have a baby.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at that age in my life, I wasn't even thinking about having children.
Mine was just periods and how...
You got lucky.
Yeah, mine was just periods and then...
You're far younger than me then.
And we just got like a load of pads, and then it was like, there you go. And
serious.
I was like, oh, okay, cool.
They didn't talk about periods. We just had this like artificial penis going in on the screen, and then this bit of sperm being ejected. And that's how you make a baby. There was no enjoyment
nothing,
in it.
Nothing. No.
Yeah, they never said the woman was really happy, you know, and they were in love, you know. But I learned from a very young age that, you know, Cinderella wasn't a happy young person, and that my Prince Charming wasn't going to come in on horseback and. Yeah. Or save me from a tower with my long hair and all this, you know.
Although he was gay.
Yeah.
I wonder why he was so well dressed.
You know, in Snow White, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, you listen to these children's books and we're educated a load of bollocks when we're younger. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't have those surroundings. And many girls in society, very young girls that are becoming the legal age of OnlyFans, their parents, you know, to keep a roof over their family's head are working two jobs each. They're not at home in charge of the internet, and they're not at home to provide that guidance for their children. And the schools have been restricted on what they can advise. The police only have so many actions.
How old do they have to be? There must be a legal.
Watch do pornography.
Yeah. No, like only the online stuff.
Only found. Everything is 18.
Mm. Right.
Quite personally, I think it should be raised to 21.
But that's there forever.
Always. If anybody wants to know how long it's there for, Google my name.
Right.
I swear on my...
But do they... I mean, they know, but it's... They must know that in the future, they're basically pushing all their chips in to one at 18. Because relationships, family, work, if that's... That's not like a secret thing or a porn DVD. That's there, online.
Well, I mean, I can relate to them. When I first got into pornography, I didn't think my brothers were going to find out. I didn't think my whole town was going to find out. I didn't know the whole of the UK were going to find out.
Yeah, because it's going to a DVD.
Yeah.
But if it's online...
Oh, my God, it's everywhere.
That's all your employees.
Everybody knows. But, you know, now you're not allowed to be judgmental. So, in fact, I mean, you know, the young girls and young boys, because I know, in fact, being a counsellor for the industry and still being in contact with a load of performers from my era, the men have really struggled.
On really. OnlyFans?
No, just in life.
Oh, okay.
Because you're given a skill at a young age, 18, if you get into it, 18, to turn your emotions on and off. And that is the most damaging experience because that carries through with you in life. So then you stop having empathy for others and you can become very bitter. And for the men, it's that, you know, having a relationship is almost non-existent for them because they can't keep down a relationship.
I knew a guy nightclub, so I can't think of years. So it must have been about 18 years ago, something like that. And he was well known in the British porn industry. Black guy, nicest guy. It might not be him. But anyway, the nicest guy. It's just a nice guy at a nightclub with a few drinks in him. Nice, like really friendly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I've worked with Omar. Don't
I'm
worry.
Not saying it's him. Not saying it's him. But I forgot my point. They're throwing me off now. They've unnerved me. Right, as I said, I'm not saying it's him. But he came in once with a girl, and I was talking to her, and she I said, "Oh, do you do that as well?" And she said, "Yeah, blah blah blah." Anyway, and I was asking about dating. I can't remember what the answers were now. But she said, it's funny, like when you, because I was thinking questions when I was talking, it was so interesting. And I said, what's it like? Do you know when there's like the first time somebody's done it? And she said, yeah, you can tell. And she said, after a few times, she said, you see the sort of light go behind the guy's eyes. Where
exactly.
Now they're just going through them. When they start, they're still trying to be nice. She said, eventually it just goes and they're glassy eyed and they're just doing it to whatever. And I thought, oh, God, Dad, the light goes. I remember that. The light goes from behind the eyes, just doing it. I'm just doing something to somebody.
But that's how it is. And now back in, going back 20-odd years ago, you know, I actually think the men were just phenomenal because they used to be able to keep an erection, do the scenes and have to stay erect even during camera and light changes. And then the director would shout down 10, 9, 8, and they have to do a pop shot on, yeah, like, you know, when it gets to 1. And well, I'm like,
there must be emotions. That, yeah. For a fella, you've got to get the, unless it's just testosterone just through the roof.
No, right. So in my era, we used to have a rapport with, I mean, I got in a very fortunate position where being so at the top of my game, I was able to choose who I worked with. So I had, you know, kind of my whole circle of who I would perform with. But you get to know them, you know them, and you've got a rapport and you have a laugh and it's all about, and then making the scene is great fun. And, you know, you're trying to write fuck one another. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I'll take on a challenge. That's me. And that's how it used to be. It was great because you got on with your work colleagues. Where in today's, it's like, okay, it's all mechanical.
Right.
But back then, they never used to inject their penises. They never used to take Viagra.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Could you just rewind that? What do you mean inject?
So in today's society, men inject their penises with something called Trimix.
Right.
That keeps you erect.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a needle?
A needle. It goes in the base of your penis. So I think into consideration, if they chose to enter into the industry, that is then an inject point within the base of the penis, and sexually transmitted diseases, including blood diseases, are then at a risk because they've got an open wound at the base of their penis and having sex with them.
Are they able to, like, you know, perform and basically ejaculate at the end?
They'd be shy of that.
I know.
That's how babies are made.
My mum's listening.
She's only just found out, didn't you?
My mum's listening.
Yeah.
That's how babies are made.
Can they ejaculate afterwards?
Yes, they can. Yeah. But there's some men that really, really struggle. And there is such a thing as a stunt cock.
Mm.
Okay, a lot of people are like, really? Are there fluffers? Are there stunt cocks? Yes.
Mm.
You know, there are. Because, you know, I've been on a lot of sets where maybe the guy would have been new and he could keep an erection up, but he couldn't ejaculate on demand.
Right, yeah.
Mm. I mean, so they would have a stunt cock, or they'd have a little trick.
Like ready, waiting in the corner.
There's another real good trick that they used to use, is a man's penis would be out of shot and the girl's there going, oh, give it to me. And they'd mix a cast of sugar and water.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm happy or sad.
It's just ruined it for me now.
And you always know when that happens because the girls will be going, that's lovely.
Yeah. I bet it tasted lovely.
Any other time, they're like...
Would he still get paid then for that?
Of course, because he's been hired for the day. So, and, you know, you've been hired for a day rate.
It's such lies for real life, because you'd be like, but they look like they're loving it, but when it happens to me,
doesn't taste like that. Need to drink Guinness and eat cherries.
I'll do that. It's a little trick.
Is there a pay gap difference between the men and the women?
Huge.
Oh, which way?
So the women are, you know, you take the woman out of porn, there's no porn, apart from gay porn.
So the men get less? But surely the pressure's more on a man. You must have a smaller pool.
I'm in agreement.
Yeah.
Always, you can't have as many men, surely, that can do that than women.
Exactly. For a woman, we can fake an orgasm. Yeah, so, every woman's done it in their life.
But there is a clear difference.
Very, very clear. You know, the women are taking it and it's easy to fake an orgasm. You know.
But
you've done it. Oh, and if you haven't, you're going to.
But
I perfected it.
There must be not many men that can do that. That's an ask.
In my era, when they weren't using Trimix or Viagra or any other kind of injection, there was very few men. And I used to think it was really wrong that the guys were paid so much less than the females. I mean, it depends whether you're working in Europe, America or England. In England, the going rate for a boy-girl scene was £300. But the guy may get £50.
No.
It's
that massive.
But surely they can't get that many people to do it. That's all the desperation.
Got to be a talent, because before the injections, before Viagra, how are they able to keep it up? Did you have like a fluffer or is...
Look, you know, when you're a porn actress and you're working with the guy, you will help them the best you can.
Yeah.
But, you know, not every guy can do it, as you know. I mean, there used to be a show in my era of working in the industry called Porn Idol.
Mm.
And
wow.
Yeah. And so we'd have to be there as, you know, as a thing. And
like
as
a reality
model.
Show.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
like Simon Cowell.
Yeah, it's a bit like, so it was a nightmare because you didn't know who was coming onto set, right? And I was like, you know, I'd learned many tricks by then.
Yeah.
And you're like, it could be anybody. You could write in and become, as long as you're tested and it may become Condom or not, then you can come on and, you know, have sex with a porn star to see if you could become, you know, good in the job. But I was really good. I mean, there's little tricks that I knew that if you squeeze two fingers at the base of the penis, you can stop the blood flow going through. They're never going to get hard on. You've never got to do a scene.
Oh, no.
then,
you must get a load of guys applying, just like, oh, I'll do that.
Oh, my God, there was hundreds of
but
you.
But there's no way of training them. Like, it's just straight into the job.
Well, no, I mean, every man looks at porn. When I'm going to say every man, there's four sat in this room, so maybe we can have a look. And every man who watches porn, you know, thinks, yeah, I could be a porn star.
I could do that.
Yeah,
but there's no
that.
Way to know. Look, there's nothing that happens before the film starts for their first time.
No, not at all. I mean, they've had a wank at home or something.
Yeah.
You know? But how many films have gone down the pan? Because you go, this is just some bloke.
Well, it doesn't because, you know, you've got humour porn. You know, like porn idol was humorous.
Right.
So a man can sit at home and go, yeah, he can't do it, but I bet I could. Okay. So then they're writing. And then you had like, you know, you got to remember, so you had the TBX and the adult channel and stuff come in around, you know, the same era that the internet came out.
Yeah.
And so there was lots more production. So they were the ones who were producing Porn Idol for the adult channel. And
you know what I have in my head? I just have America's Next Top Porn Star in my head.
Well, go 20 years ahead and it would just be on MTV. Like it would just be.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was on a judge once on a set in America and it was. God, I can't even remember the name of it, but it was with Seymour Butt's uncle, cousin Stevie. Mm. And he was on a major reality show in the UK for several series. And we had to judge them on performance, you know, squirting distance and all this stuff.
Squirting distance.
Yeah, and I am literally just sat there with a friend who I'm still with friends with today. And I'd retired by then. And I was like, I don't even know what I can judge on, you know. It's just so stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had to crown a winner and... You know,
when you go onto a film set to do a scene, have you met the guy before?
As I said, in my case, I'd reached a level where I was able to choose who I worked for.
Okay.
Now, at the beginning of my career, well, my first ever performance actually was with a major company called Private. And I'd never performed. I just knew I was good at sex.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd had some experience in my personal life of experimental sex and I was very happy with my sexuality. But I'd got there and this woman walked out with a dog going, hi, Leanne. She was 60 years old with a Labrador in this country mansion house. And I'm thinking, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then I go inside and then there's somebody else going, hi, do you want coffee? And I'm like, okay. And then the two guys on the film equipment were about 50. And I was like, okay, so what's, you know, where's the stud? And they went, we are the studs.
and that's a proper company. It wasn't like a private.
No,
thing.
Private was the number one company within Europe. And I was like, oh, my God. And they said, don't worry. You know, this is a scenario. You've missed an audition. You need to give us a sexual favor for us to put you through.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. My God, my first ever. I mean, I'm with good at body angles, but, you know, in fact, I look at it now. I mean, because I'm writing my life story for something. And it was a case of, actually, my ass looked really good on that.
Oh, do you still see it now?
Oh, it's still online. People re-edit it and it's still up there.
It's still online?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're saying.
Yeah.
I get sent so many internet things, say through, you know, X, so Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm still going, oh, my God, I still have your favourite scene. Another performer from America only yesterday sent me the picture from that exact shoot and said, I still miss you. And I'm like, Jesus.
Is there nothing legally that you could do nowadays to say, look, you can't just sell this now. That contract is not valid.
No.
There'd be something.
When you make a porn movie, you have to produce two photo verifications of your ID to prove your date of birth and age and stuff. And then you sign a contract. You know, when you're a young mother... or a young woman or man, you're just thinking, give me the paycheck. So you don't read
for it. Nowadays, somebody must be able to go, look, you're 18, it was 19, that's not, you can't keep...
That would just come down to morals now. You can't. I mean, you can get, with the new GDPR, you can ask to be the right to be forgotten.
Oh, okay.
So you can have that online, and you could. I'd be there all day because of, you know, it's on several websites and third party websites, and there's no way.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So you know, I learned many years ago to embrace it because I know a lot of former performers from my era that it's destroyed their life. Yeah. You know, they can't do the job they wanted to do, or they couldn't become a musician because of their past. And you know, there was a lot of avenues stopped, and I thought, I'm not going to allow that to happen to me. So I just tell the truth about the industry.
Yeah.
I'm not a victim of the industry. I chose to go in it. I wasn't forced into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
How do your kids, do they support you?
Yeah, look, now is a completely different story.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, I had to do a lot of diverting the truth.
Yeah.
So that was hard. And then when my son went to school, especially to secondary school, they're like, your mum's famous. And he'd like, he was too young to understand. Then this one guy bullied him at school. And I don't know if anybody's aware, but I'm pretty clued up on legal stuff. And, you know, if I was signing my son over to a school between 8:30 and 3:30, they legally have an obligation to protect my child, no matter what circumstances. So then after the first time he got attacked for me and my career past, I went into the school and said, look, okay, you've already breached your contract. I said, one more time and I'll see you in a courtroom. And it happened again about a week later. So I took his school to court alongside the pupil. And I had the police backing me up because they went, well, yeah, because legally, if you didn't send your child to school because you signed that contract, you would be fined and also be punished. And what people don't realise is that the schools have a contract to protect your child, that you have...
So their duty of care is...
It's a duty of care, and they breached it. So I took them to court, and my son got compensation, the child got removed from the school, and a lot of the teachers got retrained.
That's brilliant. I'm so glad
that they took it
so seriously.
Well, I mean, by then as well, I mean, I'd retired, and I'd gone into sex education with the Family Planning Association, and... You know, everybody's got a past. There is something that each one of us, even sat in this room or listening, are going to say, you know, yes, I've done this and I hope to God that never gets out. There is going to be something, whether it was wanking at work and you don't want your boss knowing. I mean, that's a 74% rate that men masturbate at work.
Just no.
In
the toilets or, you know.
At work, though.
Or
maybe that might be the fetish.
Yeah.
That might be
the fetish. Well, it's a regular thing. Men get... You know, erection several times a day.
Yeah.
So there's many things that people are hiding in their lives. Yeah. Okay. I just chose, because I didn't have the best upbringing, and I don't chat to members of my family now. And that's just due to their respect of me and their constant attacking on me. When in reality, once I realised I only have to accept my actions and my reactions. They're the only two things I'm in charge of.
You're like the Harry and Meghan of the royal family. Like, you're the one that's... They call you Harry. Oh, he's Harry.
Oh, you can call me Harry. Yes.
After the first time you did it, the film, were you looking back now, were you any different afterwards?
I don't think so.
No, really.
I remember I've had great conversations. I mean, I'm in talks with a major director who actually called Dominique, who actually was a director on the Halloween movies. So, you know, I was having meetings with him only 2 days ago. And he's like, your life is extraordinary. And he goes, when do you think that you evolved in life? And I said, I evolved when I joined pornography, when I've done something that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And... You know, a lot of people, you know, I was very wise. You know, I wasn't stupid enough to go in there and think, oh, my God, you know, I need a new Gucci handbag and a new pair of heels, which a lot of people do. I was like, right, OK, so here's a 2-year business plan. This is what I'm going to do. I learned far more about consent in the porn industry than I did outside.
Right, yeah.
Consent was constantly spoken about. Outside the industry, there was nobody in the school talking about consent. My parents didn't. They were like, oh, just don't let somebody touch your body.
Yeah.
You know, they're not talking about consent. Consent comes in many ways, no matter how it is, consent, if they're in your boundary and you haven't said yes or no, they have no right. They have to wait for you.
Were you able to? How long were you involved with it?
Well,
a few years
as a performer in the industry, just over 2 years.
What were you able to date?
No, I chose not to. I think that would be disappointing.
Chose not to.
Mm. For me personally, I felt that I wouldn't. It would be totally unfair because I wouldn't want a partner going and sleeping with other people. So why would I expect him to?
What's the general relationship status of people? Do they tend to date each other?
Yeah, there's a lot of dating one another. There's a lot of marriages within the industry, successful relationships. And some people, you know, I know a beautiful performer in the UK who's got a very supportive husband. And it's like their agreement. I've sat and had dinner with them and I've asked many questions myself because there's no way I could have done that. But they're really happy and as long as this only works.
Do you keep in contact with a lot of people?
I've kept in contact, because after my retirement, because, as you're aware, I was raped by Ron Jeremy. And I'm happy to talk about that, so don't worry about that. And so after that, that kind of helped me leave the industry because to me, I was just like, I'm not protected.
Had you made the money that you want? Did it come out financially the way you wanted?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it worked.
Well, I was no longer surrounded by drug dealers and criminals living on a council estate.
So it worked.
Estate.
It served its purpose.
It served its purpose. Okay. Absolutely.
What did you do straight after?
Took a rest.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have a gap?
Yeah, damn, I took a rest.
Yeah.
But then I met a partner, and he, at the beginning of a relationship, everything's hunky-dory, but I do remember, God, this is embarrassing. So the internet was right at the,
Did you start getting nervous when the internet came along?
Right. So I met this guy. He was a top
Did he
end.
Know about?
No, I told him I was a body double for Demi Moore. Yeah.
If you're going to lie, why not just make it... A big one.
So, I used to work in Hollywood as a body double. So, and at that stage, people used to compare me to Demi all the time, so I was able to pull it off.
Yeah.
And he was like, cool. And
what did he do?
He's a major property developer in London. And so I had to go to Amsterdam, and it was going to be my last ever movie. And I knew that it was going to be a fetish movie. I knew who I was working with. I was thinking, right, okay, I've only just met him. You know, it's early February. I'm going in 4 weeks' time. You know, I just tell him it's a photo shoot, okay? You know, and it's just a body double photo shoot. You know, again, it's the internet. I didn't think it's going to come out that fast. And he said, oh, I'll meet you afterwards if you want. And I thought, what, in Amsterdam? And he said, yeah. And so I said to all my work colleagues, other models, I said, look, he wants to meet me on the last day. I sort of told him it's just a photo shoot. So if all you guys meet him, it was a dressed like photo shoot. We were doing an advert or something, or we're all body doubles. I don't care what you say. You just don't.
Please back me up.
Yeah, back me up. He's a new partner, and Anyway, so I met him. We hung in his hotel, and then he said, look, I've just got to pop down to the internet. I've got a work email I've got to check on. I said, okay. He goes, oh, come with me. We'll go for coffee after. I went, okay. You know, just thinking, loved up, didn't think nothing of it. And then he sat down and sat on a chair next to him and he had to do an email and I said, cool. And he goes, I know how we can get to know each other better. And he put his name into the Google.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right. And so, and then he literally turned around to me and said, oh, it's your turn.
Oh, no. There's no way of escaping that.
How can I misspell my name?
So I'm sat
Google.
In his cafe.
How dare you?
Thank God it was Amsterdam.
Right.
And I put it in and he just looked at me and and I just went, oh God, I'm so embarrassed. And he goes, this is what, I'd already checked you out.
Oh.
No, he'd already Googled you.
Oh my God. And then he said to me, how did the photo shoot done? I went, oh great.
I knew you were lying.
No, not at that time. Oh. He thought it was just a photo shoot. Anyway, like 6 months later... We're walking around the adult convention in Olympia. I didn't think nothing of it. I just thought, you might see the odd box cover of me or whatever. And he said, yeah, of course. And we're walking around the Olympia and I'm thinking, why is everybody staring? I don't know what's going on. You know, I've made lots of movies, but normally they don't stare this much. And then I saw another producer goes, oh my God, you look amazing. And I was like, oh, cheers. Oh, he said, no, on the posters. And I went, what posters? And he took me round to the stand. He said, that last photo shoot you done in. this whole
the blood drain from your throat.
You're like, oh, darling, so about that photo shoot.
So embarrassing. So this whole stand was dedicated to me, and you had floor-to-ceiling posters and, oh, my God, and me in positions and, like, doing sexual acts. And I had to say to him, I'm so sorry. And he goes, don't. He goes, look, we'd been together about 4 weeks.
Mm.
I'll let you off that. Is there anything else that I need to know about? In fact, there wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, you have to go through all this stages.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? What more than that? No, trust me, that is it.
Has he ever watched any of the videos of you?
Of mine?
Yeah.
I've had to for research reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, so over the years, like I actually years ago got offered a book deal from Random House, but they wanted it to be a misery memoir.
Mm.
And although I've been through some difficult stages and some most horrendous situations, I don't think my life's a misery memoir. So I refused the deal because they wanted me to keep out the wrong stuff and keep out too much stuff, which is the base of the book. And so for this research project that, you know, I've had to go through loads of my work to hand over to this, you know, to this famous director who wants to turn my life into a Netflix series. And so I've had to find, you know, my work and send it over to him. And I'm like, he goes, I don't need to see all the hardcore stuff. Don't worry about that. It's more about what my image was, my attitude on set. Yeah. So I have had to look at them. And for me, it's a third person.
Yeah.
You know, I can actually see it as if I'm watching a different person perform. Yeah, yeah. Because obviously we all evolve in life.
But it's so drastic change.
Did your partner watch it?
Oh, I'm single now.
Oh, a partner at the time. Did he watch it?
I hope not.
No.
No, I mean, every partner I've actually had, if they've said they've watched my stuff, I'm kind of put off.
Yeah.
Because
what happened to him then? Because you got through that. How long did it last for?
Mm. It lasted for 2.5 years, but, you know,
just general relationships.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I think, you know, for him, he knew my past. He knew who I was. He knew that there was a lot of interest to get my story. And he became very insecure and jealous and couldn't handle that when we were out, I'd get all this attention and then he'd want me to dress like this. Mm. We'd fight. He stole my passport.
God.
That was
a bit of a jump. To perform, like, so obviously if he had seen any of your work.
Well, you've got to perform as a partner.
Yeah. Was he like, well, she's not making any of the noises that she normally does on the videos. Is there something wrong with me? Like, you know, she's silent, but it's because you're actually having an...
Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
But yeah, you're actually having an orgasm.
I mean, I've actually never been a quiet person. I've had complaints from many neighbours.
Really? Do you have on your videos and when you're performing, did you actually have any orgasms?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have called myself an actress because I was just performing.
So you weren't switching off.
No, I loved every. I'm pretty.
So you're not really acting.
Yeah.
No, I enjoyed everything.
That's brilliant. They were. I mean, I think people watching it, they want to know that you're actually having a good time.
I was having a great time.
Yeah.
In every consensual thing that I took part in within pornography, don't get me wrong, there's some that I look back thinking, oh my God, I should never have done that. But I did. And in that stage of my life, that's the attitude I had. But no, I don't have anything I look at and say, oh my God, I shouldn't have really done, you know, that I regret that or... But I was never faking either. I mean, people now would probably say, man, that sex performer's got ADHD or something because I was wild, right? I was wild. But I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't on alcohol. I just had a very healthy sexual appetite. Some people want to be an athlete. Some people wish to be something else.
Mm.
For me, you know, I was just very good at this particular job and very adaptable. Do I feel I was taken advantage in some situations? Absolutely. And there's one series that I can't actually watch. And they used to be a former agent. And when I left them, they actually sent the Russian mafia after me because I'd left them. And I was in America and I was like, why are you sending the Russian mafia after me? They go, because you left us and went to a different agent.
Oh, wow.
And how did you get out of that?
Well, I barricaded the house up.
Just let it pass.
Yeah. I had some good friends in America who just said, right, let them try and come here because we'll take them on. And about 6 months later, I met one of the Russian guys actually at the ABN Awards in Vegas. And I said, he goes, I know you. And I said, well, how the hell do you know me? He goes, I was the one that they had called to say, you know, we want you to go and do some damage to this girl. And he goes, but then I asked him what damage they wanted done. And he goes, well, she stole a girlfriend's pair of shoes. I have no reason to steal. I'm on serious money. Right, yeah. She's a size 3, I'm a size 6. So it was down to me leaving them. Mm. And I had a real good chat with this, like, mafia guy. And he went, he goes, I totally believe him.
Yeah. What a crap lie to make up.
It's crap. I know. If you're going to send a Russian meal, I've not ripped off, you know, I've never done any criminal activity. Yeah. Important, none whatsoever. So to be put in that position, you had people who tried to control you. Mm. And you had to be strong to not be controlled.
Yeah, yeah.
But any, I remember I'd done a Surrey road trip with him, and I actually cannot watch that because he would get me when I was in a mood of a sexual high, and that's the best time to take advantage of someone. You know, how they see it. But it makes a person far more vulnerable if they're already in their high. And when I look at it, I'm like, he should never have done that. That's one I really, really can't watch. I would never review it. I would...
But that's not bad to have that one moment out of the whole lot. You've done all right to...
Did you have protection at the time? Did you have, like, anyone...
If I went to a British set, I had a driver come with me.
Yeah.
And he would be there reading a newspaper. A couple of times it was upside down, but he was still reading a newspaper.
He's just like looking over the newspaper.
but either...
A few eye holes
in. Yeah. You know, you're like, oh my God. So yes, on when I first got into the industry, you know, he's still a very good friend of mine called Jason Mascor. He managed me and... He used to go to set with me. It was fantastic. And then I got myself a driver so that you are on set and protected. You've got protection there. However, there were a few, such as there's one producer called... their actual surname is Sutcliffe. Yeah, I know, it's quite scary. There was all these rumours that he was related to Peter Sutcliffe. Right. He wasn't. And he wouldn't let any of your friends or colleagues go into that room. And that's the only time I felt really uneasy.
Yeah.
And yes, he tried to get me further than I was willing. But as I said to you, the industry educated me on boundaries.
Mm.
So my boundaries, I knew not to cross.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I didn't feel pressured by it. And
yeah. Is there any time when you've gone in and you've said, you're like, no, 100% I'm not doing this?
Because
what was their reaction?
Well, the first time when you get onto an agency and they're like this, the ones I just spoke about with the road trip, they'd send you to a movie that you're doing that day, and you turn up, and I was just doing, you know, regular boy-girl intercourse sex or girl-girl intercourse sex. And then you turn up to this director and you say, oh, it's actually, you're booked for an angel. An angel? an anal thing. I said, well, I don't do anal yet. And he's like, well, if you don't do anal, then you're going to have to pay for the whole shoot. What? It's been wasted.
No.
I never gave in. I was quite happy to walk out. And I did on several occasions. But there's many people who gave in.
Right.
And basically, you know, they were coerced.
It's like blackmail.
Well, it's coercion.
Coercion, yeah.
Yeah, they were, you know, put into a situation which now, that would never, it's illegal. You cannot coerce somebody and pressure them into taking part, especially on any kind of act, whether it's an anal or digital or anything. But that particular agent did not care for me. And then you go, you know, I managed to go to America and leave the British industry. And then you really were educated on boundaries, specific healthcare. They had their own healthcare system.
Mm.
And it was far better.
Did they... Because is it like a big community for like porn actors? If you had a producer like that, would that be a black mark against their name? Would you tell everybody else, be like, look, don't use him because, you know, he did this
to me? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I volunteer beside a union in the United States called APAG, run by Alana Evans. And I have done for several years. And with their union, the performers pay like a $5 fee per month or something. But we've got lawyers, counsellors, available 24/7. And yes, absolutely.
Mm.
And I have no shame in blacklisting anybody. If that
We've got social media as well now. You can just get on social media and that's the end of the career.
No, not so quick on that one. So, you know, after the wrong case or during the wrong case, there was a lot of girls going online and accusing other performers of, you know, being violent or rough or not stopping when they were told no. But they were putting it all out on social media. So I used to try and say to the girls, you put this out on a public thing, you're waiting to get sued for defamation.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you've now negatively impacted any future case you may want to bring. Because, you know, if you're going out online and doing something, it's like, hold on a second.
Yeah.
So I try to pull them back. But I'll be honest with you, not everybody is 100% mentally stable within the industry. And especially Twitter, there's many girls that will join forces and cause a lot of drama online. And I privately message them and say, look, let's bring you back in.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you want to talk? Do you need some help?
Do they think, because if they did go forward, they won't be listened to? So they think, well, I'm going to go online, loads of people are going to see it, and this person is going to, I'll get the masses on them, you know, I'll get them cancelled, or is that?
Not really. I think, you know, the industry in America is massive.
Yeah.
So I think that unless you're surrounded, because you become who you're surrounded by,
mm.
you know, and there's certain agents and mentalities, there's a whole different, you know, variety of mentalities. If they don't believe in the union because they'd have to pay $5 a month, they are like, oh, well, I don't want somebody telling me what's right or wrong. You know, there's a lot of rebellion, you know, that happens. And then you've got some other girls that will encourage one another.
Mm.
And, you know, they want to go online and belittle somebody. And I'm like, please don't do that. Because
I wonder if they think it's more casual than they think it's casual to just go online and you go, no, do you understand what you're entering into?
What you're into. That's,
you might as well print that in a newspaper if you're putting it online. Is that serious?
Well, it's probably worse to put it online.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think because, you know, we have, since the Me Too movement, then I've watched it go on and on and on and on with people making accusations online. And I'm thinking, please do not do that because, you know, you can't, because, you know, I work beside the Met Police and I work beside the NHS. So, you know, there are certain measures that you can weaken your case. Mm. And
what do you think about the, it's very topical, what do you think about the Russell Brand thing at the moment? Because obviously with the Channel 4 have released Dispatches and they've got five women that have come forward. Look, do you think is
I've not that, watched the, I've not watched the documentary and I've not read the newspapers. Mm. I actually don't really listen to the media.
Yeah.
Because I think it's exaggerated and they coerce people into talking. Now, so it would be unfair for me to comment either way.
What do you think about going out and doing documentaries like that, having people on? Is that a good way of going about it? Or is that just putting stuff online?
Look, you've got journalists going out, taking on a counselling role, taking on a criminal role. You know, by making out, if you come forward and do this, then the police will protect you and all stuff like this. No journalist has a right. They are not qualified in the criminal justice system and they are not qualified in counselling. So I feel that they are the ones abusing these victims by getting them to talk.
Yeah.
And I will always think that because, you know, we'd go to the Ron Jeremy comment. Now, I never went public before I was approached by the American, legal system, and because it had already been exposed into the LA Times. Because
oh, really? I wonder if then, yeah, if something happens in the news and they think, right, go and speak to everyone that he has ever met and see.
Well, there were so many people that knew about my incident with Ron Jeremy from that industry. So what the LA Times had done, they had done an investigation, and I'm still friends in the LA Times. They're great people. They've really looked after me, actually. And then they go, your name's come up. Can we chat to you? And I said, look, is it going to keep the bastard in jail?
Yeah.
There was only like seven people at that time and there was a chance he was going to get out. And I was like, do you know what? I've wanted this for many years. And I've always spoken quite, you know, amongst friends what happened. And he said, you know, we've had good insight. Would you be willing to talk to us? And I said, okay, because I'm a counsellor for the industry, it was going to be very unethical for me not to really talk about it. And to be honest with you, I was ready to go public with it. And as soon as I did, then I got approached by the criminal justice system going, can we interview you? And they needed, you know, for people to go into a court, to be involved in a court case, it's not just done on what you say. You know, so me giving them my side of the story, they don't decide to press charges just because of what they've listened to. Mm. You know, I had to give them a list of people who over the last two decades I've spoken to about it. You know, friends, you know, confidants. And they had to ring people from all over the world because there were several people, even some I don't even speak to anymore, but I still had to contact and go, oh, you know, can you chat to these investigators? I can't tell you what it's about. And they're like, sure. So they had to get evidence from other people to say, right, is there a strong enough case? And then, you know, after interviewing with them and them having all their gathered evidence, you know, that they finally said to me, you know, we're actually charging him. And so it's, you know, if somebody is, these documentaries don't always help a case.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, I've worked in mainstream media many times, and I advise anybody from the adult industry, before you work with them, you please just talk to me so that, you know, because I understand them.
It's not an ethical thing. They're not trying to right a wrong in society. No. They're trying to make money from advertising.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, how would you advise people in the industry at the moment if anything does happen to them? What would you advise them to do?
Okay, so most people would be like, the police won't listen to them because they walk to a front desk. I opened up an avenue between the porn industry and the sexual violence unit at the Met Police so that girls or guys don't have to do that. Mm. They can actually either contact me directly and I can get them, the police to be plainclothes to meet in a public place or even at my house. So I can't believe, you know, I still find it quite shocking that I was the one who had to do that, and that was only about 4 or 5 years ago. So why?
Yeah.
People have never taken sex workers seriously, where in fact, you know, they could probably walk into many banks and say, right, you need to do the marketing this way, you need to do the account system this way, you need to do this. Is that they were scared. I mean, I was scared, you know, all those years ago, because Ron had inside contacts with the LAPD, and plus the porn industry has said to him, what if you talk about, they're not going to listen to you, you're a porn actress, and you're overseas in America. And, you know, and that's how it was. And so I was due in Vegas to sign my autograph, and then I came back to England and never went back.
Yeah.
Is your House of Ardent?
Yeah.
That's your website. Your email address is on there. So what is it you're trying to do with that? The Gordian Knot.
Yeah, I was going to ask,
The Gordian Knot's fantastic. Mm. So I was approached by the NHS probably about 2 years ago now, and it was somebody who works very high up in the sexual prevention unit. And they said, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the sexual predatory behaviour and abuse of the NHS on the sexual side. I said, no, not at all. And I said, but how did you get my number? And they goes, oh, we researched you. And I'm like, so you don't work beside the Met Police like I do and involved in all the meetings? And they went, no. It turned out this woman who's head of, in her jurisdiction, head of violence, she was actually a detective who took down Levi Belfield.
Oh, yeah.
So she had a police background. And she knew I worked with the police. And she said, you're the leading woman in the UK that I want to take on board. And so we'd done some talks with the NHS. And now, you know, each department in child protection and safeguarding, they were like, can you put together a series? So we put together the Gordian Knot for the NHS. And now it's getting outsourced to children's homes. And it's about advice.
School? Do you go to school? Is there a like into the education system?
Right. I'm not allowed to go into schools because of my past. It's ridiculous. Mm. And in fact, you know, I mean, I could sit here actually and I could tell you how bad some of the production companies are, mainstream productions. So, you know, I don't need to mention a name. You'll probably know who it is. I was doing a show called Sex Education. And they asked me to go in because children are being spoken to about for the show about pornography. And I said, okay, that's great. If you've spoken to them and briefed them, then I don't mind coming in and being part of the program. And they put me at the front of the class and they said, right, children, this is an ex-porn star. Do you have any questions?
No.
I'm like, I just felt so sorry for the children. And I just said, look, you need to cut that.
Yeah. Well, what are they going to ask?
I said,
what are they going to ask?
Well, I mean, it also took me back to my young days of being in the sex education class, you know, like how to make babies. People saying, does anybody have any questions? I mean, which young child is going to put their hand up and say, well, actually, can you tell me when I look at porn how this really happens? Well, no. I'm not going to sit here and discuss the matter that a TV journalist has decided to try and cover.
How old were the kids?
Probably about 11.
I didn't even know about porn when I was in...
Nor did I. And I became 11. The queen of it.
So you'd be like, what, food porn? What are you on about?
Is that the M&S desserts, love? So you know, there's a lot of abuse to the industry. You know, a lot of the abuse that I see comes directly from the mainstream investigators and journalists. And I'm not saying anybody's guilty or not guilty, and I will look after absolutely any victim, and I will stop any crime or deal with any crime that gets sent my way. And I just think the abuse is happening from outside the industry, thinking, well, these people are vulnerable anyway and they don't give a shit about their lives and themselves. And it's wrong. It's got to stop.
Yeah.
So the, I do the NHS stuff, and then I'm involved in the first ever major research project through the Gordian Knot. Is so there's a very famous UK top surgeon in anal injuries. So and she, you know, Leslie Hunt. I met her through the Gordian Knot, and there's a lot of injuries turning up in A&E by young women with anal injuries because people are copying stuff from porn because what they're not seeing on a porn movie is the preparation that goes on beforehand. I mean, we didn't just go on to set and a guy say, hey, we're going to do anal sex and push it in. It doesn't work like that.
No.
Not as a professional. You need to be prepped and you need to have the right lubrications and everything. But the young girls aren't seeing that, and they're doing anal sex and turning up and getting rectum injuries really bad. Mm. And prolapses and stuff. So we're now, she said to me, can you help me put together a research project? And I said, you know, it's not only just for the NHS, but for education purposes and for younger generations going on and on for decades to come. Absolutely, of course I will. And I'm actually recruiting, well, first I'm starting with 12 major adult stars who do anal sex for a living, who do it professionally. Mm. Got them on board, and then I've got other people who perform anal sex, and maybe they might be a sex worker or stuff. And they're going to get screened and have cameras put inside to see if there's any injuries about the long-term damage or whether doing it professionally and correctly can prevent injuries. And then what I would like to see is, that, you know, just like any other mainstream film, this movie was made with professional actors, performers, and shouldn't be shot at home if you don't know what you're doing, basically.
I think it definitely should, like the education with kids and stuff, it's not just heterosexual, sorry, what was I saying?
heterosexual
sex anymore. You know, there's other sex out there. And especially that anal, it's not talked about at all.
It's not talked about. And the injuries and the cost. I mean, you know, there's a lot of abuse within the NHS, but they're also picking up the bill for a lot of uneducated children. You know, and even with, you know, they're paying for any sex worker's STI, you know, assignment maybe, testing. Before they can go to work, that's all free. But if they pick up chlamydia or gonorrhea or anything on set, then they go back to the NHS and they're getting free prescription to get their drugs. So the NHS are actually very entwined with the porn industry and also sexual injuries. So they've really got to take some responsibility as well, which is where I've got approached and said, can you educate the NHS? And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Because it's a preventative measure, you know?
Exactly. It's a health and safety preventable injuries, and it's about time it got spoken about, because, you know, people are slagging off the NHS, but they are so restricted by the government. You know, the police, you know, people seem to think that, you know, getting somebody charged for rape is simple. I can absolutely tell you it's not that simple, and the stress and the assisted help you need to get through it is a lot.
Is there any? I don't know if it's been around long. Well, it must have been with this sort of watching porn and young people. Has there been enough years to understand the effects of that yet, or are they still not there? Because it's definitely got to be doing something for young kids to have it on their phone,
I'm qualified in quite a few areas of, and especially one of them is like the impact on the younger person's brain. So, you know, the dopamine levels, you know, this is why when you start off watching porn at a young age, it can become addictive, because they're no different to giving your kid chocolate as a baby and then not shutting up until they get their hit again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like any other hit. Sugar is a hit. So if you're going to start watching porn at a young age, then in your dopamine dopamine levels are going up, and then eventually you're going to have something else to make them go up, and then go up and go up and go up. And that's where it becomes more harmful. Now, people reckon that there's no such thing as being a sex addict. There's no such thing as being a porn addict. You can be addicted to anything. You could be addicted to tapping the table. You could be addicted to picking up and down a bottle of water or something. You know, everything can have an addiction to it. So for children, as their brain is developing, their serotonin, their dopamine levels are still developing. So pornography, yes, it can be damaging to young children, absolutely. And when you've got parents who are having to work full-time to care for those children, or the parents that don't work are probably putting them in, you know, watching Coronation Street, EastEnders, and God knows, daytime TV, you know, which is also very unrealistic. Then children are getting damaged from a very, very young age. Very, very young age. And it's not just pornography, but pornography contributes to their reality of sex and reality of a plumber coming round and fixing your drain pipe within about an hour. It doesn't happen. You know, it's so, but this is how kids need to be able to know it's serious and have a, and but to be able to absorb that information. And they're getting spoken at and not with. Now, when I got trained and went on courses with the Family Planning Association, which is the original sex education provider in the UK, you know, this is only about 2 years after I'd left pornography. And they were like, oh, my God, thank God you've chosen to do this because we really need your help. And I'm like, hold on, I want your help. And they were like, no, the information you have is what is needed because, on, you know, in decades to come, this is going to be soul-destroying. And they're completely right. I mean, we're here two decades later and still I'm not allowed to go into schools.
Because it's just such a, like a, it's a personal thing for, like, for kids are watching porn. They don't want to tell anyone because it's so frowned upon that they don't want to be open about it. Like, you wouldn't go to your mum and dad and be like, oh yeah, I'm just watching.
Yeah, you're just watching
MILF porn upstairs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, it's frowned. And then so if no one knows about it, then how is there any help there?
I think the parents need to be educated. That would be my belief. I believe that, you know, when you've got your parents evening at school, why not, you know, have a class there for the parents to just say, look, you know, there is an information class being taught on how to talk to your children about pornography. Because I'm not being funny. It is a, you're having children. That child is reliant on you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you are born is such, so I'll put it in, you know, real easy words. So everybody's got a laptop computer these days or a phone. So it's brand new. It comes in spanking, no information. Boom, fresh as a daisy. That's how we're born into the world. And you, it's only what you feed it and what keywords you put in, it can find stuff. And, you know, so you're programming something. And that's no different to what we're doing to our children. We're programming them. And that child can only knows what the information is it's fed it. So if a parent isn't talking to their children and they're having to go on the internet supervised, they're bringing up everything. Now, yes, you can stop kids using the internet, you know, especially, and I'm not talking about teenagers. Parents need to act now.
Yeah.
I mean, when I walk around this, you know, when you walk around town or something and you got kids watching, they're like, oh, they're on YouTube watching a thing. I'm like, don't even touch it. I had a friend who had bought a specific Amazon laptop for children, and it was meant to be one that nothing could get through. And he was sat in my house with his daughter, and I saw something come up, and I just grabbed it real quick. You know, it's not the porn actresses and performers doing this. This is the person, the platforms that are getting through on the security levels. I mean, you've got to remember, these are very intelligent high-tech people. Pornhub was free IT people from Canada, you know, and then flooded the internet. And unfortunately, you know, they tried to make out they had a remedy for it, but they don't.
I mean, how old are your kids, if you don't mind me asking?
Now?
Yeah.
29 and 27 now.
Okay, so it's a while ago. Did you ever have a chat, or did you just drip things in as they were growing up? So I don't know if the term having a chat is like a bit outdated now, but
yeah. I mean, basically, I spoke with my children, and the best way to do it, which I found, is, you know, they knew their mum was famous for a little bit and didn't know why. And oh my God, somebody asked my one neighbour, this is when I first moved to London, lived in a really private gated area. And this neighbour had turned around to my children and said, oh, you know, what did you, you know, you're just, you're new here. That's great. You know, welcome. What, you know, introduce their kids. And one turned around to my son, he was only about six, I think. I said, what has your mum done? He goes, oh, she takes her clothes off.
Oh, no.
Fair enough. Sort of right. It's not wrong, is it?
And I was just like, what? But he knew that little. He was still so innocent.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
So what? How I dealt with that is rather than talk, you know, just say, right, I need to sit you down and talk to you, because I think that's talking at somebody, not with somebody. So even at six years old, there is kiddies programs and, you know, Inside Out is a more modern one that's around.
Oh, yeah, it was a movie.
Fantastic movie.
Oh, I love
movie.
It so much. I watch them. Give that, I watch it so many times.
Every parent needs to watch it. It's about emotions and everything.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Good. It's done yeah. really well.
Okay. For an adult, right. Oh, yeah. My God, I love it.
Yeah.
So when I was watching, say, a cartoon, and maybe two characters in a cartoon had gone to kiss each other, and my son would go, oh, my God, they're about to kiss. I'm like, okay, what do you think kissing is? And he'd be like, well, they're going to have sex. And I said, well, what do you think sex is? And I would interact with them, but let them lead.
Yeah, let them ask questions.
Let them ask. Yeah. And I'd say to them, well, what do you think kissing is? And then it made me understand their knowledge from a very young age. Of what they...
Yeah, because they're going to naturally... I'm just thinking now then, it was probably more the fault of parents, because when kids probably did ask questions and they just go...
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't the kids. Babies, they were always going to ask questions. What's that?
Always.
Why are they doing that? Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no way I could have gone to my parents as a kid. I mean, you've got me joking. I remember seeing their stash of porn in the cupboard. Do you know what I mean? There's so much.
I read the niece of Trump.
Yeah.
And she's a psychologist and she wrote a book, and she was talking about growing up in that family and what they were like.
Wow.
And the mum and dad were like Victorian. Like,
exactly.
And she
yeah.
said she was at the table once and she said, I asked, one of them was pregnant. She said, what's that bump in the, I can't remember, the auntie's belly.
Mm.
And she said, the mum and dad put the knives and forks down and got up and left the room. That's how uptight they were, face talking about it.
Well, I had the same when I was younger, and I know that, you know, I come from a suburbia town, and I don't come from a big city or anything, you know. And, you know, back all those years ago, there was no education and nothing was spoken about. And I think that's why so many historical sex abuse cases are coming out now, is people are like, oh, why are people coming forward now? And I'm thinking... If you would have asked my mother when I was younger, or tried to tell my mum something, she'd be like, oh, don't tell your dad, he'd get angry. Like, it's like everything got swept under a carpet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that generation, which was my generation, grew up thinking, oh, my God, nobody's going to listen to us, so why go there? Or, you know, and you have to break the cycle. Somebody has to. I mean, I broke the cycle well and truly, you know. I mean, I found my grounding and my sexual consensual boundaries within pornography. I mean, that's telling you something, because, you know, I remember my first stalker when I was 13. He got sent to jail and I was 13.
13?
You didn't even know what a stalker
13.
Was.
13. I didn't have a clue.
How old was he?
He was much older. He was about 25.
Oh, gross.
And he used to live in the same street forever down and masturbate in his window. And then one night he followed me home. And my friend who lived across the road, her dad came over and said, look, you know, he's in your garden now. And I'm so sorry
that you had to go through that at 13.
I may have been younger, 12, 11, 12. Yeah. And I had to go through that, and the police had to come and interview me. And then obviously...
You don't fully understand either.
I didn't have a clue what was going on. And then one of my other friends had got caught being abused by her father. And, you know, nobody really... discussed it, and it was an embarrassment to, you know, for my friend. She moved away. She couldn't deal with the embarrassment. So I think many years ago, you weren't able to talk about anything, let alone talking about sex education. Parents just didn't know how to do it, and that's because they're not trained. So I do believe that every parent should, at some stage or another, have to go, and if they want to talk about their children, instead of, you know, blaming everybody else, why don't you take a class in sex education, or, you know, even contact me? How do I chat to my children about pornography? I've written papers on it, you know, and they're on the website Medium.
Because bearing in mind, even if the problem was there in the 80s, 90s and all that, you didn't have hardcore porn on your phone as a kid, so you better start talking about it now.
Better stop.
You might have got away with it for a while.
I remember giving my son his first mobile phone at 13. It was linked to my account. That was the last thing I was thinking of. All I mean, you know, I just know that on his first week, he ran me up an £1,100 bill from texting numbers in the back of a newspaper.
Oh no!
Yeah,
I was going to actually ask you about like your kids' friends and other parents. How did they feel about? Did you have lots of, you know, like parties? How did they feel about like coming over? And
so, no, I've never been. You know, since my kids were at school and everything, I was never one to have lots of people over my house anyway. Mm. But then obviously when I was in the industry and I used to drop them off at the school gates and stuff, I mean, there was a lot of people going, oh, you know, oh my God, it's great. You know, you've made something of yourself. I think, And then there was other ones going, oh my God, you know, and grabbing their kids. And I'll tell you, one of the worst things was, it wasn't so much the women trying to shield their children from me. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
You're not going
to
say the husband.
Oh, the husband.
It was the husband, yeah.
He's obviously sex mad. Yeah. Is, yeah.
It got a little bit too much. And first of all, I used to say to him, look, you've got nothing to worry about. I mean, your husband's not writing me a check. You know, he's not paying my salary, so I wouldn't worry about it one bit. And then it would go on every day at the school, and eventually I'd get a little bit bitter and I became a little bit too cocky probably. And I turned around to him and say, look, sweetheart, I said, I don't want your man. I said, so you're totally safe. I said, but when you go home later and he's fucking you, he's thinking of me.
I love that.
And then you
that.
Just changed schools immediately. Come on, we're going.
Well, in fact, we moved to London out of the suburban area and everything was fine. Because in London, it's just like they think very differently to a suburban area. Yeah. So it kind of changed up here. And then I went into managing adult stars, you know, when my son, you know, after my retirement, because of the Ron situation, I knew that I had to protect other young women that were doing pornography. So I went into management. And so, like, my son was brought up around some very famous adult stars, but they don't behave at my house like they do on set. They're probably in tracky decks with their hair tied back.
Who's she?
Mm. Yeah, no makeup. Yeah. Trainers on and probably munching on fish and chips or something. So, no, you know, his impression, he got to realise they were real people. Mm. And my son actually has no judgments on people.
Lovely.
As long as you are kind. And my son, you know, people always thought I would have children that were drug addicts or alcoholics. Not at all. My son hardly drinks. Mm. Never been a day out of work. He's lived all over the world. He's a chef. I mean, that's probably my fault, that bit, because I never cooked, I never do. And I used to have a living nanny to take that job on. Mm. But, you know, never. And people actually do turn around to me a lot of the time. I mean, I don't go back to my hometown very often now, but I'm very supported.
Yeah. Mm.
They're like, you know, you obviously went through a lot that we didn't realise.
But it's like, you know, it doesn't really matter what you do. He's seen you work really hard, like, and bring in the money and be so, I don't know, what's it, passionate about what you do. And, you know, like, he's obviously seen that growing up.
He's been absolutely, you know, my best supporter. I mean, during COVID, when I was doing counselling, you know, there was a lot of adult stars and a lot of people in abusive relationships, and I was having to safeguard some people and working all night and day long with counselling situations. And my son was like, Mum, who's looking after you right now? And, you know, and then I realised I had to take a break. And then obviously with the police from America and having to go to America and give evidence, you know, big trials. And he was just like, who's looking after you? He's looking after you. And so he's quite actually...
What does he do for a job?
Chef.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah,
he can eat now.
Is he married?
No. And he has the utmost respect for women. If he went to a bar, which is very unlikely because he doesn't, he absolutely cannot stand a man chatting up a drunken woman.
Mm.
He finds it so insulting because they were vulnerable and they're just taking advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's such a genuine, beautiful, caring young man. But he, again, doesn't... Dating sites, you know, you're meeting girls who most of them do have OnlyFans accounts now. or they want to be admired. I mean, you've only got to look onto Instagram. And my son likes somebody, he wants an authentic person who has an individual kind of outlook, but knows themselves. He's like, I want somebody who's maybe been through struggles in life because they're real.
Yeah.
Mm. He doesn't want a girl that needs a Gucci handbag and high heel shoes. Yeah. You know, that's not him.
Yeah.
So looking forward then, so what's going on? What have you got? You've mentioned a few things about you're doing. So the film, a book.
So much.
I know somebody that produces autobiographies, so I can talk to you about that. Mm-hmm. But what about long term? Is there anything long term? Are you planning on leaving the country? Are you planning on
staying in the country.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I emigrated to Australia in 2011, came back 2017. They're very liberated in Australia.
So what are you planning on doing? Sort of 5 years. What's going to be out? It's going to be hopefully a Netflix series. A book will be done.
Yeah, well, the Netflix series, I mean, I'm in talks with Dominique. He's from Paris, and he'd done the Halloween movies and a few other movies. And I deliberately watched of how he directed sex scenes in his mainstream movies, and they were done so well. And so, I've now got to get back to the drawing board. I mean, I've written a lot of my biography, but left some stuff out because years ago when Random House asked me to write a book, they wanted certain things left out because they never wanted to get questioned about any suing. And then they also wanted it to be a misery memoir. Very fortunate, a well-known media guy from the UK pulled me aside. He said, look, Leanne, you're too young to write a biography. Wait until you're 50.
Yeah.
I'm 49, so it's pretty cool. but no, I'm carrying on with the NHS on the sex education side and the research projects.
Mm.
And still be educating on pornography to professionals who don't, you know, who deal with sexual crimes and sexual behaviours but don't know about pornography. So, and I still always work beside the Met Police, so if a crime comes in within the porn industry, then I will. Counselling, I decided that, you know, especially after the wrong case during COVID, it's easier for me to work in education than doing one-to-one counselling. However, I still am available if the girls are obviously in any trouble. But no, the education route.
Sorry. And what do you sort of do for yourself? Like, what do you do on what your own hobbies and things?
Well, I'm also training, and you're probably going to feel mad. but my friend runs a Pilates gym, and she keeps getting let down. So I'm actually getting trained in Pilates now.
That's nice.
Well, a lot of the stuff I've done since leaving, I've worked on Jeremy Carl's on X Foot before, and I've worked on loads of sex like shows, you know, on Channel 4, Channel 5 and stuff. And I took a break and I got qualified and fitness years ago and managed gyms. I didn't get qualified to teach people or be a private trainer. I went in there to manage gyms. So, you know, I became number 4 saleswoman in the UK for Nuffield, two decades ago.
Oh, wow.
And so my passion is, you know, I've always wanted to care about other people, about how to help them invest in their self. You know, that's what counselling is about. That's what running fitness centres is about. You know, I'd done probation work before porn. That was about getting other people to help their self. So I'm staying within, you know, in the arena.
The well-being.
The well-being.
So do you do Pilates now?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I'm qualified in yoga as well. I did 5 years ago. I took on a challenge and went to India to get qualified in yoga in 28 days.
What do you prefer, the yoga or the Pilates?
Definitely Pilates. I mean, yoga's good if you can bend your spine and everything, but
it's more physically effective than Pilates.
I've been to a Pilates class before and I thought I was doing it right. And I was the only one that she kept going over to, like, no, you need to have your back like this.
Yeah,
you need to have
it
straight. And I just had terrible posture. So I
make your back touch the floor, bring your belly button into your spine, make sure your pelvis is in the correct, you know, thing. And that's lying down. And then you've got to learn how to do your pelvis stood up or sat.
I was speaking to a female trainer. She was a bodybuilder, like a proper bodybuilder. And she said, because we were talking about a magazine, but it's a long story. She said, there's so many things like people don't know. And because that's what we were discussing. I said, you know, I'd have to tell women in their 35 to 40 year range, that's when you lose the weight and can tone up the easiest because your estrogen levels drop.
That's right.
So you've actually got this big window where you can exercise and get 10 times the effect you did that when you're in your 20s. He said, people don't even know that. He said, it's the best time to train is when you're in your 35.
Yeah. 35.
Because your estrogen levels drop because estrogen keeps water.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I'm on a hormone replacement. I have done, you know, I nearly died in Australia from a boob job. That's a whole different story.
Oh,
and when you come back from that, I'd gone into instant menopause at 37. So I've been on a HRT since then, because you've got to take it till you're at least 50 because of osteoporosis. But of course, it just makes your hormones like a teenager again. I'm like, do you know how bad I was as a teenager?
Don't start again.
Yeah. I know they said life begins at 40, but seriously, give me a break.
Right, so, well, there you go. I think we covered everything there.
Yeah.
Did everything. We got everything. I don't know. It's just popped into my head. I'd forgotten this. There was a... It's not really relevant. There was a video. I can't remember why it popped up. But anyway, somebody said... it was a series. They were asking people things. And there was this American journalist, and he was asking people. And he's saying this seriously. He was saying, like, there's a new statistic that's just come out that 99% of American men claim to masturbate. And what do you think about that? And the guy, just some old guy, he said, it tells me 1% of American men lie. I think we'll end there. So I think
it's going to get love it.
Brilliant.
Well, listen, Leanne, best wishes to everything. Thank you for coming
in
today.
Thank you so much.
It's been great.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And we'll see you next week for some more fun.
Thank you. Could be alive.